a Contra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we try to tackle some big ideas, some complex research, and really boil it down so you can get the core insights quickly. Today, we're diving into something huge, really a massive intellectual history, psychoanalysis. And we're doing it through the lens of a really, I think, definitive and balanced work by the historian and analyst Daniel Pick.
Yeah, it's a topic that for a lot of people is kind of wrapped up in cliches, isn't it? You know, the couch, the notepad, maybe some vague ideas about blaming your mother for everything. So our goal today is really to move beyond that, past those caricatures. We want to clarify what psychoanalysis actually is. Think of it as this dynamic, evolving framework for understanding how our minds work, both the conscious part and, crucially, all those powerful forces operating underneath, the unconscious.
Right. And you might be thinking, okay, but that's history, right?
Yeah.
Freud, Vienna. It's old news. But it's really not. Why we're diving deep now is because these concepts have, well, they've completely soaked into modern culture. The language we use every day, think about it. Ego, projection, repression, the classic Freudian slip. Wow. We use these terms constantly. So if you want to understand how we talk about human motivation or art, film, even politics today, you kind of need to get to grips with where these ideas came from.
Absolutely. And to guide us through something this complex and, frankly, often controversial, Daniel Pick is really the perfect guide. What makes his perspective so valuable, so unique, is this dual role he has. He's a professor of history at Birkbeck, University of London, but he's also a practicing psychoanalyst.
Yeah. And that combination is just brilliant, isn't it? Mm. It lets him handle the subject with such nuance. Mm. So as a historian, he can place psychoanalysis right in its specific context, you know, that intense atmosphere of late 19th, early 20th century Vienna leading into all the turmoil of the wars.
Exactly. He doesn't see the theory as some abstract thing floating in space. He sees it as a practical response, really, to the real human suffering and anxieties at that specific time. But then his clinical practice keeps it grounded. He's not just defending some dusty historical relic. He's showing how these ideas are still alive, how they evolve, and how they're still, well, deeply relevant to understanding ourselves today.
Okay, so let's unpack the big idea, the central claim of Pick's book. He argues that psychoanalysis was genuinely revolutionary. One of the most revolutionary ways of thinking about human behavior. Why? Because it introduced this really radical, maybe even unsettling idea that a huge part of what drives us comes from outside our conscious awareness, that we have this hidden inner life.
Yeah, and Pick puts this shift, this intellectual revolution, right up there with Darwin or Einstein. Now, that's a pretty bold claim, you know, but he backs it up. Before psychoanalysis, the common view was that our conscious, rational self was basically in charge. Psychoanalysis just shattered that. It introduced this idea, maybe uncomfortable, that, as Freud put it, we are not masters in our own house.
That really is a fundamental shift in how we see ourselves. Earth-shattering is a good word for it.
Yeah.
And Pick's book really stands as this robust defense of the theory's ongoing sophistication. It traces the whole journey, starting from those early days in Vienna.
Mm-hmm. It covers the core concepts meticulously, how the mind is structured, the role dreams play, the dynamics within therapy itself. And importantly, it doesn't gloss over the disagreements, the splits. It shows how key figures like Jung, Adler, Klein, Lacan, they took Freud's ideas and adapted them, challenged them, built on them.
And then it connects all that theory back to the wider world. It looks at the huge cultural impact, but also, importantly, addresses the major criticisms, things about scientific proof, or historical biases like patriarchal views. It gives you the full picture, warts and all. Okay, let's dive into some of those core discoveries. Starting right at the beginning, with the origins and the famous talking cure. This foundational moment, it centers around a patient known as Anna O. Her real name was Bertha Pappenheim, who was treated by Freud's early collaborator, Josef Breuer. She had these symptoms they called hysterical back then, physical issues like paralysis or vision problems, but with no obvious medical cause.
Right. And the breakthrough, really quite unexpected, was that when she talked about these symptoms and the memories linked to them, often really intense, emotional, forgotten memories, her symptoms would actually lessen, at least for a while. She called it chimney sweeping.
What a great metaphor. Like cleaning out the psychological soot and grime. And this observation led Freud to his crucial innovation. He moved away from hypnosis, which Breuer used, towards the technique we now really associate with psychoanalysis, free association. So instead of the therapist leading, the patient is just encouraged to say absolutely whatever pops into their head without any kind of censorship.
And why is that so important? Well, Freud's hypothesis was that the root cause of the suffering wasn't conscious. It was something the mind had pushed down, repressed, because it was too painful or maybe too threatening to handle directly. Free association became the tool, the direct line, supposedly, to bypass that conscious filter and get to the hidden stuff.
Okay, so if these painful conflicts are repressed, pushed down, we need some kind of map of the mind to understand where they go, how it all works. This brings us to the famous structural model. Let's focus on the key conflict here, the main tension.
Yes, exactly. Think of our mental life as this constant negotiation, a dynamic interplay. On one side, you've got the ED. The ED is that part of us driven purely by instinct, raw desires, immediate gratification. It's the toddler inside saying, I want it, N now W, regardless of consequences.
Okay, so if the id is the demanding toddler screaming for cake, the ego is like the stressed out parent trying to manage the situation in the real world. The ego has to mediate between what the id wants and what's actually possible or acceptable. It's the part that says, hold on, we're trying to eat healthy, and finds a way to cope with that desire rationally.
Precisely. And the ego is constantly using strategies to manage this internal conflict, which Pick highlights as the defense mechanisms. For instance, telling yourself that cake probably wasn't even very good after you decided not to eat it. That's a classic defense rationalization. Mm. And these defenses aren't just little quirks. They're essential psychological tools, really. They protect us from being overwhelmed by anxiety or conflict.
Yeah.
Moving on from the structure, we can't really talk about Freud without touching on his theories of development. These were, and still are, quite controversial. But the core idea was that our earliest relationships, especially with parents or caregivers, lay down a kind of fundamental template for our adult personality and how we relate to others. He used the concept of libido, or psychic energy, to describe the driving force behind this developmental path, right from infancy.
Yes, and this is where Pick clarifies something important. When Freud talked about sexuality in this context, he meant something much broader than just adult genital activity. It was more about this universal drive for connection, for pleasure, for mastery over the world. The really crucial point is that those early relationships create deep, often unconscious patterns of relating that we tend to repeat throughout our lives.
Okay, and if we want to understand those hidden patterns, the things really driving us beneath the surface, Pick points us towards Freud's work on dreams. Freud famously called dream analysis the royal road to the unconscious.
Yeah, it's like the secret passage. But, he argued, just looking at the dream story, we remember what he called the manifest content. That's not where the real meaning lies. The important stuff is hidden deeper in the latent content. Those are the underlying, often disguised, unconscious wishes or thoughts that the dream is actually trying to express.
But the unconscious mind is clever, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't just lay it all out. It uses tricks, disguises things through what Freud called dream work, like a nervous editor trying to hide the real message. Two main ways it does this are condensation. That's where lots of different ideas or people get squished into one single, often weird, dream image, like dreaming of someone who seems to be your boss, your dad, and your neighbor all at once.
Mm-hmm. And the other key one is displacement. That's where the strong emotion attached to something important, say anger at your partner, gets shifted onto something trivial in the dream, like getting furiously angry about a misplaced sock. The emotion is real and significant, but the target has been swapped to make it less threatening. Analysis tries to decode these substitutions.
But if Freud's initial ideas were so groundbreaking, why did some of his closest followers, like, immediately break away? What was the fundamental point of disagreement?
Well, that's almost inevitable with any revolutionary idea, isn't it? As Pick details, the field started to fracture pretty quickly as others began to emphasize different core motivations. Carl Jung is probably the most famous split. He massively expanded the idea of the unconscious, introducing the concept of a collective unconscious.
Which is such a fascinating idea, this idea that we all inherit this kind of shared pool of human experience filled with universal symbols he called archetypes. It sort of makes sense why you see similar figures, the hero, the wise old man, the shadow popping up in myths and stories all over the world across different cultures.
Exactly. Jung argued the unconscious wasn't just personal history. It contained our collective cultural history, too. And then later on, you have the post-Freudian thinkers who shifted the focus even more towards those very early relationships, especially the mother-infant bond, people like D.W. Winnicott. His ideas have become almost mainstream in parenting advice.
Oh, yeah. Winnicott gave us that incredibly helpful concept of the good enough mother or parent, really. It's so liberating. It basically says parents don't need to be perfect. They just need to be consistently available, responsive enough. He also talked about the transitional object, you know, like a kid's special blanket or teddy bear.
Right, that object that helps the child bridge the gap between the total security of infancy and the challenges of external reality. And all these different threads, these evolutions in thought, they ultimately lead us back to the core engine of psychoanalytic therapy itself, that intense, unique relationship between the patient and the analyst.
And the crucial dynamic within that relationship, the defining mechanism, really, is transference. Can you break that down? It sounds a bit technical, but the idea itself feels very relatable once you grasp it.
It does sound academic, but the core idea is pretty straightforward. Transference is essentially unconsciously replaying old relationship patterns in the present. The patient starts relating to the analyst, not just as the person sitting there, but as if they were a significant figure from their past, maybe a critical parent, an absent sibling, an idealized first love. They transfer those old feelings, expectations, and ways of relating onto the analyst.
So the patient is basically acting out their past dramas right there in the therapy room.
Yeah.
Maybe getting unreasonably angry or becoming overly dependent on the analyst, but they don't even realize why they're feeling that way. And the analyst just lets it happen.
Precisely. That's the therapeutic power of it. Mm. Instead of seeing these intense reactions as a problem, the analyst understands that the therapy relationship has become a kind of safe laboratory. It's a space where these old, often deeply ingrained and sometimes self-sabotaging patterns can be experienced and observed safely in the here and now. And then analyzing why the patient is reacting this way, understanding the transference that becomes the key to actually working through those old, unresolved issues.
Wow. That was a really powerful tour through the theory. Okay, let's zoom out a bit now and think about the big picture. What are the key themes Pick wants us to take away? And how do they connect to our everyday lives?
Well, theme one has to be that original revolutionary claim, the power of the unconscious, the idea that we are not masters in our own house. Hmm. And yeah, that can feel unsettling, but it's also kind of liberating, I think. It encourages us to look beyond our surface reasons for things, our rationalizations, to recognize there are often deeper hidden currents shaping our choices, our feelings, our relationships.
Yeah, definitely. And theme two really emphasizes the lasting impact of early life. Pick strongly argues that those first experiences, those first relationships, create a kind of fundamental template. This helps make sense of that frustrating thing psychoanalysis calls the repetition compulsion. You know, why we sometimes find ourselves, despite wanting things to be different, ending up in the same kinds of problematic relationships or situations over and over again. It's like we're unconsciously trying to replay and fix the past.
And theme three really highlights the dynamic nature of mental life. Our mind isn't some peaceful, static place. It's a constant battleground, a negotiation between conflicting forces, desire versus conscience, impulse versus reality. Understanding this helps normalize, I think, our everyday anxieties and internal struggles. It reminds us that feeling conflicted or pulled in different directions is just part of the human condition. It's the reality of having this complex inner world.
And finally, the fourth theme Pick really hammers home is the sheer cultural permeation. This is central to his argument. Whether you buy into the clinical practice or not, you can't deny the language is basically one. We use terms like ego, projection, denial, subconscious all the time, often without even realizing their psychoanalytic roots. These concepts just gave us a vocabulary, an indispensable way to talk about the depth and complexity of human motivation in the modern age. Pick's book does a great job of crystallizing some of these big ideas into really memorable, powerful conceptual bites.
Definitely. Starting with Freud's own description of the ultimate goal of therapy, which often gets misunderstood, where id was, their ego shall be.
Right. That sounds a bit like just squashing down the wild instincts, the Izeed. But what does Pick clarify it actually means?
It's not about repression. It's about integration. The goal is to expand our conscious awareness, our self-control. It's about bringing that unconscious material, those instinctual drives, into the light so the conscious self, the ego, can understand and manage them better. It's about becoming more whole by knowing more of ourselves.
Okay, that makes more sense. Then there's that powerful quote often associated with the psychoanalytic view of the past, maybe from Faulkner, but fitting perfectly here, the idea that the past is never dead, it's not even past.
Yeah, that captures it perfectly. It speaks directly to repetition, compulsion, and transference. Our early experiences aren't just memories stored away in a file cabinet. They remain psychologically active. They continuously shape how we see the world and react to people in the present. In a very real sense, we're unconsciously reliving aspects of our past until we can understand and integrate them consciously.
Okay, let's bring this right down to earth. How can understanding some of these concepts like projection or transference actually help us in our day-to-day lives? Any practical applications?
Oh, absolutely. Recognizing projection is maybe one of the most useful tools for improving relationships. For example, if you find yourself constantly feeling that certain people are judging you harshly, take a moment, ask yourself, is it possible I'm projecting my own harsh inner critic onto them? Just becoming aware of how we attribute our own unwanted feelings or traits to others can make a huge difference in reducing conflict and misunderstanding. Own your stuff, basically.
That's a good one. And for anyone who's a parent or works with kids, Winnicott's idea of the good enough parent is just gold. It takes away that crushing pressure to be perfect, which is impossible anyway. The goal isn't to shield kids from all frustration or difficulty, but to provide a consistent, loving, reliable presence they can count on, even with your imperfections. That reliability is what builds security.
Exactly. And even in the workplace, understanding these dynamics can be useful. If you notice, say, that your team reacts to a new policy with disproportionate fear or rebellion, almost like teenagers resisting authority, recognizing that transference might be at play, maybe reacting to the manager as if they were a parental figure, allows you to address the underlying emotional current, not just the surface complaint. It can lead to much more empathetic and effective leadership.
Thinking back on our conversation and Pick's work, my biggest takeaway is how successfully he shows. Psychoanalysis isn't this single monolithic thing that's kind of died out. It's really an ongoing intellectual tradition. It's constantly evolving, grappling with criticisms, adapting to new scientific findings and cultural shifts. That complexity, the internal debates we touched on, that's actually its enduring strength, because human nature itself is incredibly complex and resists easy answers.
I agree. And my final thought is that the book powerfully reminds us that human behavior is always multiply determined. There's almost always the reason we give for doing something, the conscious explanation. And then there are usually deeper unconscious currents flowing beneath that. Psychoanalysis, for all its challenges and changes, still offers perhaps the richest, most nuanced lens we have for trying to explore that hidden, deeper reality within ourselves and others.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.